Hey friends, you're listening to Go Home Bob or You're Drunk, an irreverent media podcast.
1 Corinthians warned you about the women with a loud mouth, and this podcast is just that. Here at the Speaking in Church podcast, we talk all about the regular people and the things that regularly happen to them in the evangelical church. It's a podcast about change, it's a podcast about seeking moral high ground, and it's a podcast for people who are just trying to deconstruct on the safe side. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts, and if you want to be a guest, yes, you, regular person, you can be a guest on the Speaking in Church podcast. If you want to come on, just let us know.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to Go Home Bible, You're Drunk, the podcast where we dust off our Bibles and our holiday Christian traditions and all the things. And we try to see what's in there. Why did we pay attention to this for so long? And is there anything left of value? It depends on the day. My name is Justin. I'm a former evangelical, former pastor, former Christian, former whatever the things are. Now I'm just me, and it feels fantastic. And I have a co-host.
Yes. Hi. Hello. I also wanted to interject that I'm pretty sure that our podcast is the only official podcast of the Antichrist in the Book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
I gave that award to myself, but like Christopher Columbus, I feel like it's fair. I found it. It's mine.
We are endorsed anyway. By the Antichrist.
And Christopher Columbus.
And Christopher Columbus.
No, it's not Christopher Columbus. It's the Catholic Church. We're endorsed by the Antichrist and the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. One and the same, many would say. Anyway, I'm Tori. Former Christian. Have a Jezebel spirit, apparently, mm-hmm. Which means I don't know, haunt the devil when he's busy trying to get shit done or something.
I don't know how these things work.
I don't either. So I feel like since there's no employee manual, I can just make it up as I go. Mm-hmm. So here we are, making shit up.
I hear the screw tape letters are really good for learning what it's like to be a demon. So
Justin, I love you, but I want to kill you right now.
That was a targeted attack. Fair.
I know.
Fair.
It was not cool.
It was a targeted attack.
I'm so sick of C.S. Lewis. Like, I gotta be honest.
Yeah, honestly, C.S. Lewis probably to sit down and have a beer with, not so bad. To be to be spoon-fed the Goodreads version of C.S. Lewis most of our lives, probably not great. Do not recommend.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to give that a 1 out of 5 stars.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I noticed something. So we're recording this after the Thanksgiving holiday. I noticed something on Thanksgiving that I found fascinating was that Twitter was just awash with conservative transphobes. Apparently their families don't love them either. And they were just on Twitter. Like, to the point, I mean,
the Lord works in mysterious ways.
I think so, because it was shocking to me. I was like, I posted a couple of things like the day before Thanksgiving. I wasn't really going to post much on Thanksgiving. I was with family, but I just would check occasionally because, I mean, I'm not a monster. And they were everywhere. And
having a bad time?
Really wanting to carry the water for a particular, do we want to name the site? It's known. Coalition of Gospelers.
Coalition of the White Hood Gospel.
Yeah, the Coalition for the White Jesus Gospel.
Yeah. The Klan Jesus Gospel.
Klan Jesus.
We worship Klan Jesus. Law and Order.
Yeah, Law and Order Jesus.
Grand Reagans. All the things.
Our Lord and Savior Reagan Christ.
Oh, I bet he smelled bad.
Reagan.
I'm sure he smelled awful. He probably, you can just tell by those pictures.
Yeah, his mouth probably smelled of cloves. Like an old person.
Oh, that's a much more generous thing than I was thinking.
Old cloves.
Old cloves.
Halitosis, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we need to talk about this article. Not because I want to give it any more air than it got, but because when it comes to like this week, this month, this era in evangelicalism, it just encapsulated a lot of things. But honestly, if you're done with that discussion, if you're, you know, super activated by it for obvious reasons, you can skip ahead. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But if you want to get into it, let's get into it. Honestly, I didn't read the article until after Thanksgiving, mostly because like the title, it kind of says it all.
It does.
It you almost don't need to go further than the title of this article. And just to be clear, so this was an article post published by a Gospel Coalition. It's I love my transgender child. I love Jesus more. Written anonymously, posted the day before Thanksgiving, which again is
Clan Jesus in troll mode.
Yeah, in troll mode for sure. You know, and written anonymously, you could generously read that as wanting to protect the identity of their child. Probably that's not what's going on because their child is legally an adult. And yeah, I would imagine they would have said in the article that they were being anonymous for their child's sake because this person seems like a clout chaser.
But they just love Jesus so much that they can't talk about being anonymous.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, first off, I don't even know my way into this one. Honestly, I have so many thoughts.
I love that it is a he because obviously he has a wife, but I love that he starts off with like family conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once again, like this is a manufactured conflict.
Exactly.
That you have.
It is a conflict that you don't need to have. Like,
no, and it's completely chosen.
And I would even say this, like, you don't need to like fully understand or embrace everything about being a transgender person as a parent of someone who is transgender. Like, but just the bare minimum of curiosity would be great.
Oh God, truly, truly. Just being curious, but they are committed to incuriosity.
Yeah, like
as a group, evangelicals are committed to incuriosity. I can't deal with it.
Yeah, if this article had been like, I don't understand why my they refer to them as their son is doing this. But I'm committed to like figuring out like what they're thinking and how they're feeling and what has made them feel this way and how long have they felt this way. Like, you know, like. Minimum curiosity from parent to child, like, would have been nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Would have been really gracious. But instead, they go with this whole, like, we were completely blindsided narrative. Like, it's not stated that dramatically, but by the end of this thing, I was just like, you are a fucking drama queen. And so, like, reading it through that lens.
Yeah.
Of, like, this is white man drama queen, like, bullshit on 11.
And the like, they blame it on a friend. Like, oh, there's a friend that came into their life.
It's contagious.
But what they tell you later in the article is this person had a history of ideation. You know, they would probably want to be referred to as their daughter.
Their child.
Their child had a history of ideation, which, you know, ideation and being transgender, that's not a one-to-one correlation, but you know, like. There had been a history of problems and that probably were being ignored by mom and dad. Struggles of some, were not problems. I should say struggles that it is wild to me how far out of the way they will go to not be curious, to not extend love to someone who is different, which again, allegedly their savior palled around with people who were unclean, who were, you know, had, you know, if you talk about, you know, the Ethiopian eunuch having, you know, sexualities that were different or expressing sexuality that was different than what was normal at the time, quote unquote normal. You know, like it's not even like this isn't in scripture to at least tolerate the existence of different people from you. Right. But it's like, you know.
Yeah. Different genders even. Yes. Literally, like, different gender identities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think At least like OT, the way that it gets read in Christian churches is a little anti, like, intersex people, it seems. Mm-hmm. But yeah, otherwise it seems very inclusive, and like Jesus very clearly spoke about intersex people, which I think is like, because we can't go back and like force transgender as a construct onto mm-hmm. the past. Yes. If that wasn't like something that existed, right? Like in a lot of American indigenous tribes, they're like two-spirit people, right? So they had a construct for that and a label for it. So I don't want to like go back and like label a bunch of stuff transgender, because it's like, oh, you know, and recognizing that like intersex and transgender aren't the same, but there very clearly was like space for something else in the Bible. And it wasn't like Jesus was condemning it. That these people were condemned inherently because, you know, based on some perceived imperfection, at least not in the New Testament. So,
yeah.
But yeah, like this guy is just like, oh my God, like our kid caught the trans, and like they used to be a good Christian little child and professed faith in Jesus at a young age. And like, they were always engaging in spiritual conversations. I'm like, well, you probably beat the shit out of them, literally. So I doubt they had a choice in that.
Well, and it also talks like about how they're, again, and I'm going to apologize because this article constantly says, my son, and my, he,
oh my God.
And him.
You can see I like marked out son and he and his, and like replaced every single one of it on my notes, because I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I
fuck this dude.
Just because I may misgender this person a few times, and I'll,
in fairness, we don't know what their
gender, we don't,
or pronouns are.
But so. But it's just like, my son currently believes all LGBTQ plus identities are compatible with Christianity. So it's not even like they're not even walking away.
Right.
They're saying, right. Dad, I'm trans, and Dad, I'm like, I still want to engage in faith, and.
Yeah.
They're like, oh man, I just love too much. I love Jesus too much to support you. Like, no, actually, I would say that your trans child probably loves Jesus more than you do. And is probably more mm-hmm. like Jesus than you are. Good sir.
Yeah.
Who yeah. will remain anonymous.
Mm-hmm. For your own protection. Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the most egregious like sentences in this bullshit, which is like comes after talking about their child, like experiencing some suicidal ideation, after the author and his wife told their child, no, we cannot respect your name or pronouns. This is what, after that description, this is what he writes. In these moments, it's hard to remember that the change they are asking for will harm them, not only spiritually, but also mentally and physically.
Mm-hmm.
So just so we're all clear, that is a fucking lie. This person's a fucking liar. You didn't have to actually include that. You could have just left that out instead of like not telling the truth. We don't have a ton of data, but we do have some data. And the data we have says that like affirming people's names and pronouns, especially for children, protects their physical and mental health. So like, what the fuck are you even talking about? Like, you don't care about protecting your child's mental health. That's not what this is about. At all. Mm-hmm. The other piece of that, the other side of that for me is like, how come you get to unilaterally decide what constitutes harm to your child, right? Because you're saying your child physically dying is less harmful than Jesus having his feelings hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is a big boy. He can put on his big boy
Jesus
pants.
Is
I'm pretty
a
sure
man.
If you right. worship him, like, come on, he can put his big boy pants on and your kid doesn't have to fucking die. Like, what even is this? And again, it's just like, I keep coming back to this, like, this isn't even a real conflict. Like, you're manufacturing this because you need to be the main character.
Yeah. And also it's like, I'm going to say a couple of things that may be indelicate, but I'm going to come around to it. Like, they're viewing this as a mental disorder, and let's go there for just a moment. Like,
okay.
All of the research that we have so far says that the quote unquote cure for this mental disorder is affirming the person's identity of choice or preference or internal, however you want to phrase it. Like,
Facts don't care about your feelings.
So, even if let's just go there and call it a quote unquote disorder, the cure for the disorder is to do the bare minimum and be courteous enough to call them what they want to be called. And that will alleviate a lot of the mental distress in this moment. And and also if my kid was having continual ideation, the amount of shit I don't believe that I would say to them in order to help them, if they said I'm going, I have ideation because you don't think I'm whatever, I will think you're whatever in order to protect your life in this moment. And we can deal with the other stuff later. So it's if I'm going to jump in his little construct for a second, your logic breaks down
immediately.
Because it is clear to me that it feels like you are looking for an opportunity to dump your child in a way that makes you feel good. And I'm that's morally reprehensible. I'm full stop. And also because the Gospel Coalition not only saw this article, read this article, let this person post it anonymously the day before fucking Thanksgiving, when probably trans people, if they haven't distanced themselves from their family, are going to be with family like this dude. You're now empowering, you're empowering them with all this bullshit. And the transphobes on Twitter, it was wild to watch them fucking quote this article, to me. This is insane. And I can let it brush off my back because I'm a cis-het white dude. At the end of the day, I can walk away from this. And so many people can't. And it's the layers upon which this is harmful and in poor taste, even. Even if you believe all this shit, posting it right before a holiday, fuck you.
Yeah.
Something
else that this is after another recounting in the story of a situation of suicidal ideation. It's our questions persisted. Why can't we just hold them and make everything better? Does God care? I'm like, nope, sure doesn't. Much like you, if God wanted things to be different, he'd do something different.
Yeah.
But then he, the dad, goes on and says, when my son thought we hated him, he just didn't realize that our love for Jesus and them is greater than they could imagine.
Yeah.
And
let's park here for a second, because I have so many thoughts.
Truly. I love you just in a way that you can't see or experience.
Mm-hmm. Like.
Okay. So what does that mean?
Here's the thing about Christians and about, I should say American evangelicals and the God they claim to worship. If you have to redefine things to mean what they are not, in order to convince me that you are doing the thing, I'm loving you, but my love is just so much greater than yours could possibly be, that my love feels like hate to you. It feels like hate in your body. It feels like hate in your ears. It feels like hate by every definition of the word hate. But trust me, it's love. And I would never actually do this, but sometimes when someone says that to me, I want to punch them in the face. Hard, and be like, see, what I'm doing right now is loving you. I'm doing right now is showing you love and getting you to stop talking. And I would never do this, and I don't have fantasies about this necessarily, but it's just it feels like they need that visceral of an illustration to be like, you are so full of bullshit. Me hitting you, it by no definition in any world would be me showing you love. That's not how that works. And no matter how the word salad I would use to make you think that it was. And if I successfully did that, I'm a real monster. If I successfully convinced you that striking you was love, that's monstrous. So I don't get the mentality here of nothing, because they, secular people or the world, they think love is this, but we know love is this thing that's not love at all.
Murdering yourself, so that you can save people from yourself.
Yeah. Like I guess when that's your starting point, you're going to come up with some very odd definitions of love.
Real weird shit.
And yeah, so watching folks twist themselves in knots to like redefine love as rejecting your child. Like it just felt like a new low in some ways. It's like,
It doesn't count as love when your starting point is saying, I love you, I just can't show it, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're in a relationship with somebody and you're like, hey, I want to take this relationship to like the next level or whatever. And the response you get is, I love you so much, I just can't show it, right? So I can't be seen with you. You can't meet my family. You can't meet my friends. Like, I love you with all of my heart, and the way that I'm going to demonstrate my love for you is by excluding you from all of these parts of like who I am. All of us who grew up evangelical were coded to be abused, but if you had like your wits about you, you might leave that situation and be like, fuck this shit. Yeah. I deserve better than this. Oh,
it's Christmas time or your birthday or whatever, and I would have got you a gift, but I love you so much. I love you too much to show you love like that.
Right.
My love for you is just it transcends material reality. And like, and you might not feel trust me, it's there.
It's love. Okay, so you know what is really wild? Because like my brain doesn't really go to scripture a ton anymore, but like while I was reading him saying this shit, I was like, okay, but nobody lights a lamp and puts it under a basket.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible fucking says this.
Yes.
Like you are lighting a lamp and putting it in the cellar, my guy. That is what you were doing, and you were calling it love. Because you can't show it.
Yeah.
So it's of no use. It's no good under a basket. That's not the point of light.
And I felt like he kept using, like pulling these in these metaphors, like having a child that is like a severe drug addict, let's say.
Like, what? Like, did he use that?
He didn't say that, but I just felt like there, maybe it was just me, but I got these vibes of like,
Right. That's how he was framing it.
That's how he's kind of framing it. Like, and I will admit, if one of my children became a severe drug addict to the point where they're lying to me or stealing from me or doing all these things, like the way that I would show them love would maybe have to change or kind of shift, or it would look different. And that would be very difficult. But it's like, my guy, that's not what's happening.
Right.
Like, and that's right. But it's like, oh, I'm going to pull from this thing over here and like try to conflate these two the same thing mm-hmm. or like kind of like or treat myself as like I am a victim of the transgender agenda. They took my child, you know, in the same way the druggies took my child. And it's like, no,
right.
Like that's not what happened. Like your child probably always felt this way. On some level, and like
probably didn't always have words for it because of the way you raised them.
Probably didn't have language until they had outside influences, either the internet or friends or whatever, to like start giving them the language that they needed to describe their lived experience in your house. And then honestly, like in some ways, kudos to you for having the type of relationship where your child could come out to you, kind of. Like the people that have come out to me, like even folks that came out to me knowing I affirmed them and accepted them, there was still a little bit of fear there for them. So like for your kid to come out to you, that was a massive step, likely. And then you write this article for the Gospel Coalition. Like, that is such a treasured thing when someone comes out to you. And I get it.
Right.
This guy doesn't know. But
right.
He doesn't know.
Doesn't understand anything.
But it's like, it angers me. And I feel this sadness in some ways. It's like what the hell, man? Like you're twisting yourself in knots for nothing. And you're hurting your kid in the process.
Yeah.
Who is at a point in their life when they clearly need support.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you're going to be like, well, I love Jesus more. Like, I'm sorry, my man. Like, I think Jesus is going to probably more than vomit you out of his mouth at the end of things. Just,
yeah.
You know, spoiler alert.
I know. And like we keep touching on this, it's like pronouns are such a tiny ask, you know, like the Bible doesn't say God so loved the social construction of gendered pronouns that he mm-hmm. gave his only begotten son. Like it doesn't say that. It's mm-hmm. it's fake. Like language does not have a penis or a vagina. Like it's not mm-hmm. real. You are literally like your magic ghost guy. Sorry for the Christians listening. I'm just really mad at this dude. And his feels.
He worships a magic ghost language. Guy.
He does, yes. Anyway, like magic ghost daddy and his big feels about like your kids' pronouns and like gendered pronouns don't even need to exist. Like the, I think part of the reason that they exist is because of the patriarchy, because like I always fucking say, if the only reason you need to know what's in someone's pants is if you're going to fuck them or you're their doctor or you're trying to decide if you're going to treat them like a woman or a person. That's it. Like that's all that there is. You're trying to decide if you're going to treat someone like a woman or a person.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't treat them the same. And this would not be an issue if you treated mm-hmm. people the same. There was one little thing in here that really bugged me, and I don't know if you noticed it, but like this one of the many rants that this dad goes on says, "How could we affirm an identity that ignores God's goodness for them and ignores the goodness of the physical body?"
Since
fucking when?
There were so many logical leaps, but that one did jump out to me. That was a lot of these folks just confidently don't know about physical bodies. You know,
I thought we hated bodies. Now suddenly they're like the fundamental essence of goodness is your dick or your vagina.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. Like, and
last week I was a bucket of sin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My body was the thing keeping me from Jesus. Now it's this like, you know, and it kind of like there. And I saw so many lies and stuff going on about the internet regarding trans folks. But it's I don't. At some point, I wish they would begin to see their own contradictions, and they would begin to see the ways that they're twisting themselves up. Because, again, like the physical body, like yes, typically our bodies are gendered in some way, just from physical appearance, sure. But like the multiplicities of ways that expresses itself in human bodies. Is like it is not a binary. It is a spectrum at best. And it's not even hard to see. Like, and they're like, well, God made them male and female. It says so in the Bible. Like, okay, let's talk about intersex folks, like for a second. You know, who are, depending on who you talk to, at least as common as folks with red hair. Like, where do they sit? And you're like,
do you mean they're going extinct? That's a joke. Redheads aren't going extinct. Intersex people aren't either.
In your hierarchy of like male and female, like,
right.
And they're like, oh, well, I don't believe that. Like I had a guy tell me that one time, like, so
I don't believe in intersex.
Yeah, you don't believe these folks exist. Like wake the fuck up. Like,
do you have the Google?
Yeah. It's not.
I regret to inform you, like medical science documents shit.
You know, and then like,
sorry, you don't believe it.
There was another guy that said, well, they have to pick. Like, okay, well, they have to pick, but who tells them what to pick? Like,
yeah. When,
and what happens if mom and dad pick for them when they're born?
Which is what happens 99% of the time.
And then they hit puberty and suddenly it's not what mom and dad picked. Like,
yeah,
like, so, and that's just like one microcosm of the like thousands of ways a person might experience some kind of like not A, B gender identity. And it just, I don't know. We could talk about this all day. It's just, it's frustrating that like this article is bad on like
mm-hmm.
a moral level, on a scientific level, on a biblical level, right. A spiritual level, like pretty much every level you can think of. It's in poor taste. It was shitty timing. Like I hope these folks cannot sleep at night, but at the same time, it's like it's the information is there.
Right.
And And they just continue to choose not to see it. And our trans siblings and our other LGBTQIA folks. I didn't leave the T out intentionally. I just had already mentioned trans folks. Sorry.
The T and the trans folks.
Yeah. I did that and I was like, oh, actually, no, I want to make sure I made that clear. So many of our siblings just like continue to have to deal with this shit. And it's frustrating that this kind of stuff gets weaponized so easily.
Yeah. Yeah. It's frustrating and it's embarrassing and it's, you know, I posted this on Instagram. I can't remember if I talked about this or not, but I was like, why is it that like facts never care about your feelings when you're trying to say something like, oh, well, minorities commit more crime. But if you're trying to say like affirming someone's pronouns and gender identity reduces suicidal ideation, suddenly that's like, oh, facts very much care about your feelings now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, the feelings are what matter here. Don't care about the data. Don't care about outcomes. Don't care about what I can see with my eyes. It's like 100% feelings, 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Unless you're trying to say something bigoted, like facts very much care about your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, okay, cool. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously these folks are, they're going to say what they're going to say. And there's mm-hmm. not, mm-hmm. we're not going to stop them necessarily. And honestly, I would ignore them. I'm most of evangelical I would ignore, but unfortunately they have a lot of power. They have a lot of sway. Mm-hmm. They impact certainly the family lives of folks that we love and care about and their ability to interact with their moms and their dads and their families. And it's frustrating because there's a part of me that feels like there's a lot more folks that would be accepting of the multiplicity of the way humanity expresses itself if they didn't have the Gospel Coalition and places like that whispering in their ear constantly that, like, this is wrong.
Right. Yeah.
We could just, I don't know, like, see the world with our eyes, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I feel like it would be a lot better place.
Yeah. Kind of feels that way.
So hopefully that was a refreshing takedown, rant. I don't know what I even call that event. We're going to take a little break for some capitalism, and then we're going to talk about patrons and our sponsor for this episode. Very excited about that.
OMG.
And then we're going to talk about contradictions in the Bible because it delights us to do so. All right. Thanks.
1 Corinthians warned you about the women with a loud mouth, and this podcast is just that. Here at the Speaking in Church podcast, we talk all about the regular people and the things that regularly happen to them in the evangelical church. It's a podcast about change, it's a podcast about seeking moral high ground, and it's a podcast for people who are just trying to deconstruct on the safe side. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to be a guest, yes, you, regular person, you can be a guest on the Speaking in Church podcast. If you want to come on, just let us know.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to our capitalism. I hope that you were blessed by the ads that the Holy Spirit led the algorithm to give you. If you would like to listen to an ad-free version of the show, it's very easy. You can just go to patreon.com/gohomebible and sign up as little as like $1 a week-ish. Probably shakes out to like, what, 85 cents a week if you add in all the like 5 week months. Why is our calendar so dumb? You can do that. Yes. patreon.com/gohomebible. If you sign up at a youth pastor or above, you get a life verse given to you by us from God that you can keep forever or get rid of if you don't like it. Because we get some really weird ones.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange.
Honestly, I think the worst ones are the ones when we get a Bible verse that's like actually one that's popular. It's like,
oh, that's fair. Yeah.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Oh, yikes.
Yikes. Or don't. So again, you know. Give as you feel led. If you enjoy the show, that would be very appreciated. If you have cash to donate, or if you don't, share with a friend. Text this episode to a friend or post a little 5-star review with words attached. At least a word attached. Otherwise, it gets weird. It gets put in like a weird separate bucket. We would very much appreciate that. that helps us a lot. And again, helps the algorithm / the Holy Spirit / Al Gore do whatever magic-y things he needs to do to get the show to more people.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And yeah, so we have a new patron this week. Elizabeth has just joined the Second Church of the Drunken Bible, I believe. And so we're going to celebrate that along with all of our other patrons. And yeah. Thanks. Y'all are like literally the reason the show happens. So.
True. It's the truth.
Yeah. Super, super appreciate all of the people who support what we're doing here on our little side hustle Bible quest weird podcast adventure.
It's wild.
Yeah, it is wild.
So this week, throughout this month, we have a sponsor for the show, which has never happened before. And we're very excited about this. The sponsor for this episode is the Our Bible app. Those of you who don't know, like, there's Bible apps. You probably had one, the like Holy Bible, Bible Gateway, or whatever. There was Devotions,
so many.
Whatever. So many of them. Like, this is not that. Okay. So Our Bible app is great. And I've never done this before, the whole like sponsor thing. So we're going to do this together, folks. And it's going to be great. Okay. Cause here's the thing, like probably a lot of you, if you're listening to this podcast, you wonder where you fit into the Christian community. Do you fit in the Christian community? Are you even a Christian? Maybe you don't know. And that's fine. Cause Christianity has this history of being kind of toxic. Case in point, the first half of this episode.
Also, the second half of this episode. And
also the second half of this episode. But here, I guess the key question is, does it have to be? And I don't think it does. Maybe you don't even need to identify as a Christian anymore to crave spiritual community. And so this is where the Our Bible app comes in, because it's here to help you manage or keep your faith and kind of ditch all that baggage. You can explore a community that is sex positive, anti-racist, feminist, affirming of LGBTQIA people, interfaith, which is cool too, as well as social justice oriented. You can download the Our Bible app today to gain access to hundreds of daily reflections and devotionals that won't make you squirm as you read them, some of which have been written by guests of this show, which is really cool.
Many, actually.
A few have been written by folks that are part of our kind of broader community, which is really cool. And also, you can a library of podcasts, which Go Home Bible You're Drunk is a part of, with hosts that do the same. And, you know, there's a message board where you can find folks like yourself in your area. So download, subscribe, and ditch all the toxic theology with the Our Bible app for believers of all stripes. So this is really cool. I'm very excited. Our Bible app is great. The folks that put it together are fantastic, as well as the community of contributors that they have put together. So go check it out. And, you know, share with a friend. So that's our sponsored section of the podcast today. And so thanks so much to the Our Bible app. Tori.
Yes.
I have a conundrum for you.
I already hate you for it.
So we're talking about contradictions in the Bible today,
yes.
Of which there are many. And honestly, I don't see these as like deal breakers personally.
Yeah, that's fair. You know? But they still exist.
But they still exist. They do exist. It's fair. I think they're what make the Bible fun. But here's the thing. Would you rather live in a world like that is similar to this one, where the most popular holy book has contradictions that people can debate, people can poke fun of, people can try to reconcile, you know, wrestle with, whatever? Or would you rather live in a world where the most popular holy book has no contradictions at all? And quite literally is, from a contradiction standpoint, flawless.
I'm sticking with the one that's a fucking mess. Because I do think it is more fun that way. And yeah, religious people can be intolerable enough without.
Yeah, I mean, they would be insufferable.
Without all the dogma that they have to. Yeah, completely. Without like a perfect holy book dogma situation. I don't think I want that. That sounds scary to me.
Yeah. So, I guess this really isn't a conundrum, because we're like, we'd rather pick the devil we know versus the like maybe perfect holy book. So
the questionable perfect holy book.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be perfect, but it would be, you know, at least, you know, it would get its facts straight. So, yeah, I don't know. I think about having a I guess if I was a pastor, it would have been a lot easier to not have to field some of these questions. I might not have deconstructed if I didn't have to field these questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, fueling people like John Calvin with even more ammunition. Yeah, maybe no thanks. I might. I'm going to go with the hot mess.
It does. It does draw a lot of like just really kind of miserable people. Like even the people that we think of as being like the good ones. Mm-hmm. Frequently, it comes out after the fact that they were quite miserable.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yikes. Anyway.
Alrighty.
I like the big mess Bible, big mess version of the Bible.
Big hot mess Bible.
Yes.
All right. So I think we're going to do these maybe popcorn. I'm thinking kind of like popcorn prayer.
I like this.
Remember, did you have to do this popcorn prayer? Did you have to do this?
Yeah, we did. We didn't call it that we didn't call it that when I was in youth group, but we definitely did that.
Is when the youth pastor wasn't sure what to do and he just felt like heaping religious shame on his kids, you know, where it's like, all right, we're going to close our eyes and just pray whenever you want. Anyone, anytime, go for it.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Like my youth pastors all like loved it when I would jump in and pray because I always had the best prayers. Mm.
Yeah.
Because I just knew more of the Bible than anybody else in youth group. Because we didn't really go to like a fundamentalist church super. I mean, it was fundamentalist, but not fundamentalist for evangelicals.
Fair.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway.
Alrighty.
Yeah. So
go. Yeah. Let's
contradictions in the Bible.
Yeah.
They're not a deal breaker for you.
No, they're not. But they are fun.
Is that just because okay, hold on. So even before you decided you weren't a Christian anymore, though, like they were not a deal breaker.
They really weren't. I mean, because, well, I'll say this. Like, I'll say a couple of things. I think the Bible is really concerned. Like, so with when it comes to Jesus, the Bible is really concerned with making Jesus divine. Probably because the people that allegedly were writing it or the traditions that eventually were written down came from people that like saw him as a person, like they saw him like, you know, go to the bathroom and maybe make a mistake or get sick or whatever. Like they're like, oh, he's definitely fully human. He may be divine. Like we're going to try to emphasize that, you know? Yeah. And I feel like evangelicals try to do that with the Bible. They try to like, you know, or even just Christians in general, sometimes try to like make the Bible, oh, this super spiritual, like came down from heaven, you know, fully formed as like this perfect God's exact word. But the Bible kind of like doesn't agree. And it is messy and it's human. And it's like, and like Paul will go on these theological rants and then be like, oh yeah, don't forget my coat. And you know, they'll be
also, I'm pissed at Martha.
I'm really pissed at this particular person, you know? And yeah, I'm really mad at these people. I wish they'd castrate themselves, you know, forgive me, Lord. And I kind of like that. So even when I was a Christian and as a pastor, like a lot of them didn't bother me. So, I mean, some of the ones like we'll talk about in a little bit about the contradictions of like what even salvation is, that one bothered me.
Oh, yeah.
But as far as like, oh, like the women went to the tomb after sunrise and one book, and in Mark, they went there before while it was still dark, like, yeah. Okay. Like I don't care. What about you?
I mean, the contradictions were interesting, were/are interesting for me. Like I definitely didn't, I wasn't raised in, I suppose there were ways that like in the before times my parents were slightly more like theologically liberal with the Bible specifically. You know, I mentioned this before, but they're like old earth creationists, and you know, like they acknowledge that like the Bible did have contradictions, and they, you know, tried to explain those contradictions away in ways that made something approximating logical sense. Now I just find it laughable. Like I find all of those explanations to be like incredibly comical.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess like for a long time, like even like long before I left, I was able to recognize like the Bible is not a single cohesive narrative. Like when somebody told me, like, they're like, the Bible isn't like an historical narrative, it's an anthology. Like that blew my fucking mind. Mm-hmm. And I had that lens on it. And so I was like, okay, well, it's a bunch of different, like, they don't have to perfectly agree. You know, you're talking about dozens of authors over thousands of years. Like, that's okay. Now, I mean, I just kind of see it as like a fun prank, I guess. So, I don't know what that says about me. But yeah, no, I don't think that like the piece for me, like the contradiction for me, that was the deal breaker, was like, I thought that they seriously meant love your neighbor, and they did not mean that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
those are the contradictions that broke me too.
Right.
Like,
right.
Like the fact that there are two creation stories, that makes me giggle. That made me giggle even. Yeah. As a Christian, like,
mm-hmm.
Cause to me, I even like when I was very into it and very much believed like this showcased who God was, I was like, well, Genesis 1 is one aspect and Genesis 2 is another aspect. It doesn't necessarily have to have happened that way, you know, because
right.
Mm-hmm. The ancient folks that were writing this down had different agendas when it came to historical accuracy than I do, you know, they yeah. probably if I had wrote their totally. Creation account, they would probably think it's pretty boring. And means nothing because it would just be a play-by-play of what happened, you know?
Yeah, totally.
They'd be like, where's the spice? Where's the pizzazz? Where's the teaching? Like, what? Like you're just, you know, whatever. And then evangelicals just kind of strip mine the Bible for principles or nuggets anyway, you know?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good way to put it. That's exactly what they do.
So
that's exactly what they do.
You know, it's just, you know, let's find some nuggets here. But and they're all disjointed anyway, so... I kind of like enjoyed letting it just be what it was.
Yeah, definitely.
That doesn't mean we can't have some fun.
Completely
pointing some wild contradictions out. So
completely agree. Yeah. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. So I'm going to just jump straight into incest. Okay.
Oh, hell yeah.
So Deuteronomy.
Everyone's favorite Pornhub search.
Yeah. Incest. the Bible's favorite kind of porn.
It kind of is, actually.
Yeah.
It says don't do it, but it doesn't mean it.
You know, cursed be he, this is Deuteronomy, that lays with his sister, the daughter of his father, or the daughter of his mother. So, I mean, I actually think this is interesting that Deuteronomy makes it very clear, like, this isn't just, like, full brother and sister. This is half brother and half sister, too. Like, no loopholes here. You know, or Leviticus, if a man takes his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter, it's a wicked thing. Like, it's evil, bad, nasty, wrong. Like, you know, but, and just to be clear, Go Home Bible, You're Drunk agrees with that particular.
Yes, in case that was unclear, like the Bible.
Yes.
We strive to be inconsistent.
I am in alignment with God's word when it comes to incest.
Parts of it
is not good. But Abraham didn't just pass Sarah off as his sister. She very much was his sister. It was his father's daughter. So possibly by another mother, you know, but even so, like,
yikes.
He doesn't clear the bar here. And also neither does, like,
oh my God.
What?
I'm freaking out right now because I just realized that Jesus comes from incest.
I suppose at a certain level, we're all incest babies, but.
Okay. But like, honestly.
But Jesus, yeah. Is,
I never thought about that before.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm sorry that it just never occurred to me. That, like, that's how that's like from the jump. Like, Abraham is like, he's the dude, he's the jumping off point, and it's like, this is 75% the same DNA.
Mm-hmm. Father Abraham had many sons, and they looked a lot alike.
They were brothers to him, they were like brothers to him.
They were like brothers. I mean, and also, like, never mind the fact that, like, Cain and Abel, you know, were with their sisters. And as
I just choose to believe that there were other people around.
I mean, well, okay, we'll just find another contradiction here that again just amuses me is, well, let's stay on incest for a second and then we'll jump to this one.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And then of course, no, the descendants of Noah and his family too, like all incest everywhere.
All cousin fuckers.
Yeah. So it's a thing. It's a thing. And the Bible, it's just very clear contradiction. Like I also find it funny that like when Cain kills Abel and God puts a mark on him of some kind and like exiles him, like he's worried people are going to find him and kill him. Like he's like, when people see this mark, there's going to be trouble. And then he goes and like founds a city. Like
it's just with the siblings, it's just the sibling town.
Like, so there were obviously a lot of people around.
Yeah.
That he didn't know.
They were all related somehow.
Or they were all related somehow. You know, again.
Or they were all, like, yeah.
Accuracy was
Eve
the
was
point.
Just like a prolific, puts Michelle Duggar to shame.
Yeah.
She was just popping them out left and right.
All these children that I'm going to have will want to kill me because of this mark. I don't know. Like,
my future kids are going to know I'm a murderer.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So funny.
I do find it interesting. Yeah. Like, this is not a contradiction. This is just what I find fun is that when you go through the genealogy of the descendants of Cain and you go through the genealogy of the descendants of, I think, yeah, it was Seth, kind of like looking at the Hebrew there. I'm not a Hebrew scholar necessarily. I just read Hebrew scholars. The roots of the names of Cain's sons are all like industry type names, forging, building, stonemasonry, all this stuff. And all of the kind of roots that come from, or the names are based of Seth, or names are more like agrarian, agricultural kind of, you know. I think it's just interesting that the Bible sets those two up in opposition, like from the jump.
Interesting.
And that theme kind of gets dropped later, but anyway, that's a freebie that I always found interesting.
Yeah, that's really, really odd. Okay, well, I'm sure everybody who is a longtime listener to the show already knows what my favorite contradiction is. This is Exodus 4. The Lord said to Moses, go back to Egypt and at a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and sought to put him to death. Like, okay. You know, just pick a lane.
Yeah.
God, come on.
But... God is the same yesterday, today, and forever, Tori.
Mm-hmm. He's not a man that he should change his mind.
Yes.
I don't know if you know this. This is in the Bible.
Yes.
So, yeah, God's never changed his mind, except for when he does. I was reading this really kind of angrily written blog post by someone who's written multiple blog posts called There Are Zero Contradictions in the Bible.
Oh.
So you can Google that if you want to find what I was reading today. It's terrible, but one of my favorite explanations was like in Kings, there's one list of the number of years that God says that there's going to be famine. It says 3 years in Kings or Chronicles, and then 7 years in the other book. And they're like, and so this person's trying to explain why this isn't a real contradiction in the Bible. And he's like, well, either there was like some sort of issue with like it was transposed, or like some copy editor like, you know, missed a mark or like forgot a dot, didn't cross a T, or God changed his mind. And I was like, you can't use a contradiction to justify no contradiction. Like, anyway,
it's kind of like when people are like, oh, well, when you pray, the answer is yes, no, or maybe.
Maybe later.
Like, well, you've just given us every answer.
You're right.
And then, like, God answers prayer. It's yes, no, or maybe not. Like,
not this time.
Not this time. Yeah.
God's like a fucking magic eight ball. It's just like, try again.
Like, okay.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that. That was so helpful. Your no answer was that you didn't even give. It was great. I just love that.
Yeah. So, yeah, and we could probably have an entire show just on the contradictions of like, God doesn't change his mind, but no, actually, God does.
Except for when he does. Yeah, he doesn't change his mind, except, you know,
when he does. And then when he changes his mind, he doesn't change his mind after that until he does.
Oh my God. He doesn't change his mind after that. See, I think that like one of the times God should have changed his mind was at some point during the long 33 years where Jesus was walking around on the earth. God should have gone, oh shit, this was stupid. I can do this any way I want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to do this torture thing. I'm not like searching for torture porn and incest porn. Yep. On Pornhub. Those aren't my top two searches. I should be a decent person about this. But
they are the most biblical searches.
They the most biblical porn.
I only look at biblical porn.
Yeah, like Onan porn.
Well, that was unfortunately my preferred porn.
I'm not even going to ask questions. You should go. You should do a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I should go back and explain that, but I'm not.
You shouldn't just actually. Let people, no, just let everybody sit with it.
Let everybody sit with that and imagine what they think I meant by that. How is a person saved, Tori? Can you give me a... I mean... It's the most important thing. It's like the reason this whole book exists. Can you definitively tell me how a person is saved?
From what I understand, you have to be born outside of the Middle East. But close to the Middle East, but outside of it. Because you got to know a guy who knows a guy who's got the magic key. That's from what I understand. That's how, mainly how it goes.
Because we have like... You know, in Acts, and I think in also in Romans, it says, like, you need to call on the name of the Lord, and you'll be saved. But then it also says, like, but not everybody who says, Lord, Lord.
Who calls on the name of
will be saved. And then Paul says in, like, two or three times, it's by faith alone. But then James, the brother of Jesus, says, like, that faith without works is dead. So it's, like, works, but it's faith, but it's calling on the name of the Lord, but it's also not calling on the name of the Lord.
You have to, okay, so, but no, so you have to like say the magic, you have to say the spell, and then you have to do the little potion thing, which I think is like giving your coat to somebody who needs one. And then,
which also makes sense because like, you know, it also says that heaven is obtained by helping the poor and needy, and you're eternally condemned if you don't, which is why no evangelicals are going to heaven. Well, but see, ouch. The problem is they don't emphasize that. They like when Paul says in Romans and makes it really clear that it's, you know, it, this is where Calvin gets it. This is Romans 8, 29 and Romans 9, you know, Romans 8 and 9, basically, where Paul makes it pretty clear that it's actually the result of election and predestination. It doesn't matter what you do. Like, I think that's what evangelicals are banking on.
Oh, that they've got the get out of jail. I'm a sheep card.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Romans 10 says you have to confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead.
So you have to say the spell.
So you do have to say the spell and you have to really believe it. And if you don't get to heaven, that's because you didn't really believe it.
But also you could have been born a goat.
Exactly. and then, of course, like, you know,
goats can't become sheep.
You have Mark saying you need to be baptized, but then you have St. Paul says that he didn't baptize people. Well, except so he baptized a couple people, but you just can't remember.
Doesn't count.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
And of course, like some places,
it's like how he cut a couple dicks. Doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, what's a circumcision amongst friends?
Oh my God.
I mean, and you can go back and forth like over and over and over, like of different like contradict. And of course, like, again, it over the centuries, it kind of got distilled into this like, you know, it's faith, it's works, it's kind of a combo, whatever. But it's like there were debates for thousands of years and still are debates today about what constitutes this thing that allegedly this book is entirely about. And I'm sorry, but like, if you don't have a clear, you know, like statement of theme to your mm-hmm. religion, it's kind of hard to figure out.
It's got some contradictions.
Now, perhaps salvation and getting out of jail free isn't the point of the Bible.
Oh.
Hint, hint. Oh, that's actually what I think. But if you ask an evangelical, it is the point. And again, they probably couldn't articulate to you definitively how a person actually is saved.
I mean, wasn't there like a good 1,000-year chunk in there where it was like you had to take communion in order to be saved?
Pretty much. Yeah. Like we have to baptize the babies immediately, and we have to give them last rites. Yeah. Give them communion or last communion. Like, yeah. Cause like, this is how you get God, you know?
This is how you get to the God level.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bring this up when we were talking before about that terrible article, but something that occurred to me a couple of weeks ago that I keep wanting to bring up that applies to the previous segment and what we're talking about right now is just the fact that, like, we frequently had these debates about, like, oh, is religion like a net positive or a net negative? And it occurred to me that, like, the millions, tens, hundreds of millions of people who spent like years of their lives agonizing over the fact that somebody that they loved was burning in hell forever. I'm like, nope, it's a net negative, period. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just watching somebody. I was listening to somebody talk, and they were talking about how they weren't sure if their mom was in heaven. And I was just like, oh my fucking God, I can't believe this is so messed up. Like, this is
that you're going to stress about that.
Like, he's young. He's young. His mother has died. He's like 30, and he's going to live the rest of his life not sure if he's ever going to see his mom again. Like, that is horrifying mm-hmm. in terms of like the way that theology functions.
Well, and again, not even that you're not going to see your mom again, but like,
but that they're being actively tormented
forever. Like, and this is again where the morality, we're getting on a tangent, but it's an important one. This is where honestly the morality of heaven and hell begins to break down for me, because how the fuck do you enjoy heaven
mm-hmm.
knowing that that's happening underneath you? Like,
yeah.
Like,
I suspect if I had to guess, Justin, I would say it's quite like how they enjoy America while knowing what's going on in the global South.
Fair.
They just ignore it.
Fair. Or how they can enjoy supporting Israel, knowing what Israel's doing.
Right, right.
And unfortunately, that reference will not date itself. It will keep perpetually relevant.
Not in this lifetime, it will not.
yeah, so, but again, like, how do you, no, there's no way. Like, if I, how would I enjoy heaven if I knew my mom wasn't there? Like, for some petty reason.
Yeah. Like being born in the Middle East in like the wrong decade
mm-hmm.
or wrong country.
Yeah.
Like,
it just wasn't part of the elect, I guess. Which, you know, I mean, I would question the morality of a God that would create a system that only elects, what, a tenth, a 16th of humanity, if that?
Maybe.
Probably not even that.
He's like, the rest of you are a waste of breath.
Yeah. You know, but John Calvin and John Piper, they're worth
the
saving.
Johns. For some reason, don't love it.
Don't love that. No. Oh.
So, yeah, Exodus 9, Moses is going to Pharaoh after the assassination attempt, which, you know, actually, it's kind of cool to be like, oh, yeah, God tried to kill me, but I got away. That's pretty great. That's some, like, James Bond level shit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Lord, Moses announces, behold, the hand of the Lord will fall with a very severe plague upon your livestock that are in the fields, the horses, the donkeys, the camels, the herds, the flocks. But this is a twofer. This is fucking incredible. But the Lord will make a distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so that nothing of all that belongs to Israel shall die. And the Lord set a time, saying, tomorrow I will do this thing in the land, and ... all the livestock of the Egyptians died. But not one of the livestock of the people of Israel died. That's verse 7 of chapter 9. Verse 13 of chapter 9. Moses, God's like, hey, Moses, get up early. Go tell Pharaoh that he needs to bring all of his livestock inside, because I'm going to murder them with hail. So anybody that's outside, any livestock that's left out, is going to die. Why does he have to go to Moses if all of the livestock is already dead? And also, why can't God tell the difference between the livestock when it's hailing / fast forwarding to Passover chapter 12? You have to put a mark on your door. Otherwise, jeez, I don't know if I should kill you or not. So it's like, I can distinguish between like Egyptian and Hebrew livestock, but I can't, babies, they all look the same to me. Mm-hmm. Like, who even knows what's going on there? I don't keep track of that shit. Like, somebody's got to like put up a sign, no trespassing.
Jeez.
White ghosts only or something. I don't know. But yeah, so I love that one because it's like killing all the animals, God said, and then it's like, oh, and they're back. And never mind, I can't tell which animals are. So you got to write it down for me.
God.
Like, you know, send him a text. Be like, yo, I'm in. I'm on the team. Text yes to opt in.
Yes.
Just like, I fucking love that.
Oh, man.
Like, I don't know.
So.
ADHD, drugs.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. I mean, God's got them all.
He does. He really does.
When humanity was made in God's image, that included all of our various neurodivergencies.
He's got all of them.
He has all of them.
Oh,
OCD,
man.
ADHD, autism, all of them. My third favorite Pornhub search, human sacrifice.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good one. That's a good one.
So, I mean, the Bible makes it pretty clear, like, that human sacrifice is wrong, right? You know? Like
ish, clear ish,
you know, and to be clear, you know, the pro-life crowd always likes to talk about like we're sacrificing babies to Molech or whatever, Amnon or whatever pagan deity they think eats children or something.
I don't know, Molech was kind of sexy.
Yeah, I mean, it's the hips, you know.
It's got them birthing hips.
Yeah. But again, like there's a couple places like where human sacrifice is fine. Like the saddest, more gruesome one is in Judges chapter 11 when Jephthah goes out and he like, okay, first off, classic blunder. He says, I'm going to go out and defeat these people. And as a sacrifice to the Lord, I'm going to sacrifice the first thing I see when I return to my home, like, which is. Don't make that vow, folks. Like that's
doesn't matter what the circumstances are. Don't.
That's
don't
on you. Okay. Anyway, so lo and behold, he goes out, and it's his daughter that greets him, and he's in his sads about it. And if God didn't change his mind, then God would have been like, "Hey, whoa there, Jephthah. Remember, I said human sacrifice is not good." And Jephthah would have been like, "Whew, man."
That was lucky.
That was good thing. I'm going to, this goat's the second thing I see. We'll sacrifice this goat. But no, the gross thing is he gives his daughter 2 months, like, or she asks for 2 months to like wander the hills and weep for her virginity, which is, I think, code for fucking around, but.
I mean, I hope so. What else would you do?
But the Bible says she was a virgin when she was killed. I think. Honestly, when the Bible overemphasizes someone's virginity, I feel like it's compensating. But anyway, but it's kind of a gross story. And like, and it even starts a tradition, like every year the women of Israel wander the hills and weep for the daughter of Jephthah, who we don't even know her name.
Well, it's because she's a lady.
So, but then like,
your name?
Human sacrifice is wrong and child sacrifice is wrong. But then like the centerpiece of the entire Bible is the human sacrifice of Jesus. And,
yeah.
And somehow that one's okay because God changed his mind. I don't know.
No one, it's really hard to say. Yeah, I think that from what I understand, which again, I'm like, I'm not a biblical scholar. I only read and listen to biblical scholars. But from what I understand, the no human sacrifice, there's a lot of backfilling of that narrative. Mm-hmm. Sort of after it was a little fuzzy. I can give God a pass for that one. We'll just say he didn't make it entirely clear. You know,
no human sacrifice
thing and whatever
to Molech. Wink.
The other gods, not to them. Me, we're not going to talk about
but
it.
But if you sent one or two of them my way, I wouldn't say no.
clearly you would not.
Whoa, I'm not asking you to. I'm just saying I wouldn't say no.
I would never ask you for that. Why are you doing that? Yeah. Why are you doing? Whoa. Oh, because you said you're going to? Okay, fine, whatever.
It's like that wink from Arrested Development. So yeah, that one always amuses me that it's like, don't sacrifice kids. Wink. Unless it's my kid.
Again, like the rules don't apply to God. This is very convenient.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we got time for one more.
Oh, okay. Well, that is delightful.
Unless that's the end of your list.
This is the end of my list.
Oh, it is. It is. Perfect.
Is it the end of your list?
That is the end of my list, yes.
Oh, that is. Oh, okay. I mean, yeah, we didn't.
There are many more, to be clear. This podcast would be 16 hours long if we did all of them. Those were just some of my favorites.
My other faves, top tier contradictions, Matthew 2, now Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Mark, Jesus came from Nazareth, wasn't born, which was nice because then you didn't have to kill all the baby boys.
Mm-hmm.
It was really convenient for him. Again, Jesus was born in Nazareth. Angels this time, though, in Luke. And John's just like, yeah, he was here the whole time. What the fuck are you talking about? It's like, literally the whole time. Always was.
Yeah.
Always is.
Always was.
We don't have to have this conversation.
I suppose John's the one that's like, okay, I've got y'all beat.
Right. Right.
Jesus was always here.
We don't even need to talk about it. We agreed.
Yeah. Always has been. Always will be. Boom.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. So, I used to hate every Christmas because I would be reminded of these like very obvious contradictions in the Christmas story that I would have to like have this internal debate. Like, do I like... Because I was just one of those weird pastors that did struggle sometimes when it was like when I had to, like, you know, teach 1 Timothy or something and be like, well, Paul said, like, well, damn, I don't know that it was Paul that said it. So, yeah, when it's like, here's the Christmas. Yeah,
Paul also said he wasn't going to cut off my dick. And yet,
yeah, and here we are. Most of us in this room are missing part of our dick because of Paul.
Is that Paul's fault?
Dr. Kellogg.
No. Okay. Alrighty then. Great. Excellent.
See episode, I think, 10 or something.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I love cornflakes, though. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Cornflakes are your Chick-fil-A. Like,
oh my God.
I'm ashamed I eat them, but I love them.
It's really messed up. Anyway, I'm not going to get into it. We're not going to talk about it right now. Yeah. I don't need to relive this shame.
No. So yeah, this is an appropriate one to end on. So if you find contradictions in the Christmas story, that's because they're there, and it's okay. It's okay.
It's fine. Anthology. Remember, it's not like a linear narrative; it's a collection. That's fine. You're gonna.
They didn't know you would be reading this 2,000 years from now.
Oh man, this is like my hope. Like 2,000 years from now, people like take all my shit completely out of context and are like, this is so cool. It's like she contradicts herself all the time. That doesn't matter.
Tori said that we must eat cornflakes and feel shame.
I mean, I probably, if you have my record of my Twitter, I probably said eat shit more than I said eat cornflakes, but hopefully they can parse that one out. I'm sure jokes will not translate. Nope. Multiple millennia.
Nope. You'll be the most serious person. The Tory was the most serious of teachers.
They didn't joke back then. They just didn't have senses of humor.
No, they didn't. There were no tongue-in-cheek humor. She ate her cornflakes daily and felt shame. So we must meditate on our shame.
Oh my gosh. All right. Oh my gosh.
Well, have the month that you have, folks. I hope you enjoyed these contradictions as much as we did. Make sure if you all want to or you're into it, check out our Bible app. It's a great resource for folks. Also, you know, if you would like to, become a patron. If not, just share this podcast. You know, sharing is caring. We really appreciate it. Hope you have a lovely December-ish or whatever month this happens to be when you listen. And we will see you.
Corinthians warned you about the women with a loud mouth, and this podcast is just that. Here at the Speaking in Church podcast, we talk all about the regular people and the things that regularly happen to them in the evangelical church. It's a podcast about change, it's a podcast about seeking moral high ground, and it's a podcast for people who are just trying to deconstruct on the safe side. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts, and if you want to be a guest, yes, you, regular person, you can be a guest on the Speaking in Church podcast. If you want to come on, just let us know.